This is Simply Financial, Season 3, Episode Number 30, the Mid-Year Economic Update.
Simply Financial with Christopher Calandra, Certified Financial Planner, is an innovative, comprehensive, informative, and cutting-edge podcast that discusses financial topics ranging from personal finance, economics, politics, and personal growth. Simply Financial will cover intriguing and thought-provoking questions so that the listener can simply increase their financial IQ.
Welcome to the Simply Financial Podcast. This is your host, Christopher Calandra. Today's format is a little different than most of the episodes. I recently did an economic update webinar for clients, prospects, and centers of influence. It provides just a summary of how we work with clients combined with an economic update, kind of detailing what's happened in the economy, and there's a lot going on since January 1st. So with that, I hope you enjoy the webinar.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Christopher Calandra. Thanks for joining me for today's 2019 Mid-Year Economic Summit. I want to mention that Dean Nicholson, who worked with me for several years before retiring a couple of years ago, and then I took over, his practice, will be joining me today when we get into the heart of some of the economic matters we wanted to cover today. So in advance, Dean, thank you for taking some time. For those of you that are clients, you probably know this, but those listening that are not yet a client of Elliott Wealth Management, we do a weekly podcast, Simply Financial. We've been doing it for over 2 years now. So we've gotten great, great reviews. If you haven't listened and checked it out already, please do. I would appreciate it a great deal. And I would appreciate it even more if you could subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or whatever podcast platform you use. So please keep that in mind. Tonight's agenda is we're going to do an economic review, talk about strategies to consider, and suggestions and ideas we want to advance to you. We'll also do questions and answers. During the presentation, if you look on your screen, there's a bubble. Write in your questions there. Depending on how this evolves, we may cover questions during the presentation, but more likely, to be sensitive to everyone's time, we'll wait to the end and maybe do a question or two, but post your questions there. I'll monitor it during the discussion. Before we get into the economics, I want to touch on the five key areas of financial planning: protection, retirement planning, investments, tax planning, and estate planning. And want to stress to all of you that we work with our clients in all of those areas on a very holistic and comprehensive way of client service, goal setting, and management. So getting into it, 2019 has been a strong year for investors. 2018, the fourth quarter of 2018, was rough for investors. That was punctuated by a really bad December. But the market, amazingly, has snapped back and performed extremely well so far this year. The mid-year numbers look fantastic. And the question begins to be, how long will this last? And so what we want to do is next, just to kind of set the stage, is look at bull markets since 1950. This bull market will not last forever. And let me just touch on, there's some debate as to if we are in a new bull market that might have started right after Christmas 2018, or if we are still in a bull market that began back in March 2009. I believe that we're still in the original bull market that started in 2009, meaning that we have the longest bull market on record. just so you know, some analysts think that we had a bear market in 2018, or more accurately, the fourth quarter of 2018. I think it would be better categorized as a correction. So let's talk about definitions. A correction is a decline of 10% or more. And from the high in the market in 2018 to the low, it was certainly a correction over 10%. And we got to a 20% drop, which is what the definition of a bear market is, but only on an intraday level, not on a close. And depending on your definition of a bear market, whether it has to be on a close, which lots of people think, or if 20% drop would count if it happened in the intraday, we pretty much got close to the 20%. So that's the reason for me hedging. I prefer to think about it as a continuation of the bull market. That seems to make the most sense to me. And then we're looking at the fourth quarter of 2018 as an interruption, a correction, but not the end of the bull market. So where do we go from here? A bear market is defined as a drop of more than 10%. In many instances, you could say that actually it was a bear market, because a bear market is defined as a drop of 20%. The reason why I am hedging is that the market never closed down 20%, which is one definition, but on an intraday level in 2018, the market did drop 20% from its high to its low. So some people think that we did have a bear market. I think it was more of a correction, but it was a bad fourth quarter. As an example, December 2018 was the worst December the market has had since 1932. It shows you how far back you would have to go to get to a comparably bad December. But 2019 has been strong for investors. Remarkably, the market has snapped back in a very powerful way since the sell-off in the fourth quarter and in December. And the question is, how long will this last, especially with some of the uncertainty surrounding the market? And that's what Dean and I are going to talk about here in a little bit. But first, I wanted to just kind of set the stage that I believe that we're in the longest bull market that we have ever had in the United States. It's now over 10 years old. And the reason why I say it's my opinion, because there are some analysts that think that the bear market, if they establish that it was a bear market in the fourth quarter, actually ended the bull market that started in 2009, meaning that we might be in a new bull market. I prefer to think about it that we are in a continued bull market that was interrupted by the sell-off in the fourth quarter, and especially that bad December. So that's my viewpoint, but others might differ. I believe we're in this long-term bull market that started after the great financial crisis ended, and it's still going. But where do we go from here? The equity markets dislike uncertainty, and this is what Dean and I are going to talk about. And I always struggle with this term. This has been around as long as I've been in the business. But if you really think about it, everything is uncertain. What is certain? The markets are filled with uncertainty all the time, so this may seem like a silly phrase. But I think we can agree that at times there is way more uncertainty than at other times. And I believe, and I think Dean agrees, that we are at the crossroads of one of those times when there's some more uncertainty, especially on big issues, important issues, that create even more uncertainty than maybe there might be in other market periods. So some of the things we wanted to talk about, some of the major issues that are creating this uncertainty, are U.S. interest rates, concerns about recession, corporate earnings, trade war, Brexit, oil prices, and political turmoil. So we're going to go one by one through these. Dean and I are going to kick it back and forth. I'm going to start by talking a little bit about interest rates. This is a picture of Federal Chairman Jay Powell He raised interest rates. The Federal Reserve raised interest rates four times in 2018. That came on the heels of three times in 2017 and one time in late 2016 after the presidential election, which kicked off this interest rate raising period. So we had a total of eight interest rate increases beginning in late 2016 and the final one occurring in December of 2018. Now, there is terrific uncertainty as to what the Federal Chairperson and what the Federal Reserve is going to do moving forward. For a long time, conventional wisdom said that we were in a long-term trending period where the market would consistently raise interest rates. And so the eight interest rates were indicative of that conventional wisdom. But things have changed a bit. There are some who believe that the Federal Reserve is still in this longer-term trend where interest rates are going to go higher. But increasingly, conventional wisdom has changed and has shifted to the notion that the Federal Reserve may begin cutting rates, perhaps as many as two times by the end of 2019. This is a dramatic shift, and it's one of those times where you never really know what the Federal Reserve is going to do, although they're more transparent than they used to be. But we're in a situation, kind of a weird situation, I think, where maybe they raise interest rates, maybe they cut them. We're not even sure what the next move is going to be. And then there's the likelihood that the Federal Reserve just stands pat and doesn't do anything. Personally, my opinion is that the Federal Reserve for the remainder of the year will hold interest rates where they are and allow things to play out before deciding what to do. Dean, did I do a nice job of summarizing that?
You did. I think to help people understand, the Federal Reserve rate is like a gas pedal or a brake. When you lower the interest rates, it's basically a gas pedal. And when you raise the interest rates, it's a brake. And the economy is doing so well, and there's no pressure at all on the overall economy, despite the uncertainties. I totally agree with you. If anything, depending upon what happens, and we'll talk about this later, I know the trade situation, interest rates may even go down, but I think they're going to stay pretty much the same for foreseeable future.
Does it surprise you, Dean, that we're at this juncture where there's such a wide variety of opinions as to whether the Federal Reserve will raise rates versus lower rates versus stay the same? It's fairly unusual, no?
Well, the problem is the media. You have 24-hour news coverage. In the media, unfortunately, they're not trained economists. They're trained to sell their media. So a lot of these trends get so amplified that you really have to be more scientific or economically inclined to analyze what's happening. So no, it doesn't surprise you. The media is really an enemy of the serious investor, long-term
sure.
investor.
I mean, because one of the things, Dean, that I say to clients on a regular basis and people that I counsel about winning with money is that the media's job is not to help you make smart decisions about your money.
Yeah.
And I love
That's
to follow
sure.
the news. I'm a news junkie. But I am not going to use the news to affect my decisions, especially emotional decisions about money. It's just simply not their job. Their job is to get you to click, to watch, to tune in, but their job is not to help you make smart decisions with your money. And that's an important distinction, I think. This here, everyone, is a chart of the five-year Treasury rate since 1962, and you can see that we are still near historic lows. We're not at historic lows, but we would have a long way to go even to get to what has traditionally been considered normalcy. Again, my opinion is that the Federal Reserve will hold steady. We're going to talk about some other things here in a bit that may influence that. Dean mentioned tariffs as an example. That may be one of those factors that causes a scenario where the Federal Reserve will need to act based on what's happening on the trade front. But low interest rates has been helpful with the U.S. economy here over the last period of time. the U.S. economy grew by a 3.2% annual rate in the first quarter of 2019. And if you go back the previous four quarters, the last three of 2018 plus the first one of 2019, the U.S. economy has grown by more than 3%, which is really terrific growth. That's way, way faster than the economy grew between 2009 and 2016, about 50% faster than it did those 8 years after the financial crisis. So the economy is strong, and interest rates are a part of the story, but traditionally a strong economy will be able to deal with interest rate hikes that are well done, well spaced, so the market could digest. But again, in closing, I think we're going to see interest rates stay where they are. One of the things that has puzzled me a bit, and I mentioned the podcast earlier, two quick notes. Number one is Dean and I did some exclusive content. When I say exclusive, it was for clients only initially, about what was happening in the market in December with the huge sell-off where people were a little alarmed. And we had some great conversations, and I think the advice and our perspective on things was really valuable, and much of what we talked about turned out to be correct, at least based off of 6 months later. And we turned that into a Simply Financial podcast. For those that are curious, it's titled What the Heck Happened. That's from season number 3, episode number 2 of the podcast. And on top of that, I did a podcast earlier this year, Where's the Recession? Because one of the things that happened in the fourth quarter is that a lot of people began to think that the U.S. was on the verge of a recession. But what has happened, at least so far this year, is that there's little sign that there is a recession. In fact, the U.S. economy, judging by the GDP growth, actually accelerated in the first quarter, and we have a wonderful jobs picture. So those are two podcast episodes as an example, which would be nice pairings with what Dean and I are talking about today. I do not see a recession in the short term. It's hard to imagine with such a great, strong jobs picture. We're at a 50-year low on the unemployment rate, and with strong GDP growth, seems unlikely we would have a recession anytime soon. So my thinking is that we have through the presidential election in 2020 before I think we would even consider the concerns about a recession. Just to catch everybody up, make sure we're all on the same page, a recession is defined as a decline in GDP, gross domestic product, that lasts for at least two consecutive quarters. So I don't think we're there yet. It's not something that I worry about, although some people do think a recession is going to get here quicker. What do you think, Dean?
Well, again, this is Economics 101, but I think it might help your listeners. The gross national product consists of three important parts: consumer spending, business investment, and governmental spending. And some people put too much weight on any one of those three factors, but all three are important. Consumer spending is going to remain strong because we had the tax reduction. Business investment is still strong because earnings are there. And governmental spending, either by Republicans or Democrats, politicians love to buy votes. So I see all three parts of the gross national product being very strong for the foreseeable future. I'm not projecting a recession probably for a year and a half or 18 months out at the earliest.
It's worth noting, too, that a recession does not automatically mean that stock markets do poorly, but it is something that we're watching closely. And I think that this strong economy, buttressed by the strong jobs picture, coupled with high levels of confidence, consumer confidence is still remarkably high, small business confidence is high. I think those are some of the key ingredients that will allow the stock market to continue to do well, perhaps not as explosively as we did the first half of this year, but I am optimistic that this economic backdrop will help the market to continue to do well. The next thing, Dean, is to talk about corporate earnings. So earnings growth has been good recently, although in the first quarter of this year, earnings growth was flat. And this is one of the things, tying it back to the previous uncertainty topic, is that some people have begun worrying about an earnings recession, where the thought has come into play that U.S. businesses, their earnings might have peaked and are flat, and that might not be so good for the market and the economy. I think it's a little premature based on just the first quarter, so I'm not a big believer in the earnings recession storyline. Other strategists, which I tend to favor in this instance, believe that 2019 forecasts have stabilized and that there will not be an earnings recession. I think optimistically about corporate earnings. I believe that U.S. businesses are well led, very competitive around the world. They have, by and large, beautiful balance sheets, and that they will continue to drive earnings. But it's something that we want to monitor. We're stewards here at Elliott Wealth Management and of a lot of client money, and we want to do a good job for our clients. We do not have a crystal ball, but this is one of the things, like all of the things that we're talking about here, that we wanted to monitor because a significant change in the earnings growth outlook for U.S. corporations may require some changes in portfolio construction. What do you think about corporate earnings, Dean?
Well, I think you do a great job. People may not realize the analysis you do regarding sectors. If you notice on that chart, some sectors are doing well, some are doing poorly. And I know for a fact that you diversify in these sectors to protect people because of that. So some of the work you do behind the scenes is going to protect your investors due to changes in corporate earnings. But I still think corporate earnings are going to be strong because we're the strongest economy in the world right now. No one even comes close. Even China's having this serious problem. So I think, you know, you're doing a great job for your clients, and I agree with your statements regarding earnings. They're going to continue to be strong.
Thank you, Dean. And everyone, you could see why I invited him to join me because of that wonderful compliment.
Yeah.
I mean, what a guest speaker. So
I'm retired, so I don't care. I'm just saying the truth.
So, you know, let's talk about, I think, one of the bigger items in all of what we're going to talk about. It's garnered a lot of attention in the media. I think it's natural for folks to realize that this is an important topic for the United States, for the economy, and for the markets in general, and that is the trade wars. So we had an internal debate about this because I'm not even sure I agree with the trade war topic, although it's very catchy because it has that kind of sex appeal to grab people's attention. But to me, it's not a trade war yet. The U.S. and China are still talking. Granted, there's a lot of posturing, a lot of jawboning, and a lot of tough talk. But both sides are talking. Both sides have acted to protect their interest and to leverage what they believe is a strong hand by the use of tariffs. But the thing is, China's economy is slowing. The United States economy, at least up until recently, has been accelerating its growth. And this trade negotiation being hammered out, I think in some ways is impeded. Like Dean, I'm not a fan of the media in many instances, and this is one of them, is so many people that you see in the media make it seem like China has all of the advantages and the U.S. and President Trump are out of their depth trying to get something done. The reality is far more complicated than that. For example, China. We are China's biggest customer. And I would submit to you that any time your biggest customer is unhappy, that's a problem. And so my opinion is that not paying attention to the media second by second, tweet by tweet, quote by quote, is good policy, and that at the end of the day, U.S. and China will do a deal. China will make some concessions because they've had the better of it for a long time, and there is room for them to make concessions, they're going to fight awfully hard. They're going to try and make as few as possible. But at the end of the day, I believe a deal will be struck with them making concessions. And then clearly, I think we could all agree that Donald Trump will tell us that it was the greatest trade deal in the history of mankind, which will probably be an overstatement. But the point is, if we could get a trade deal done, that'll be good for the United States of America, good for American workers, good for the economy, and that should translate to giving the markets a continued helping hand. I'm really optimistic on this subject, especially if you look out past the next 24-hour news cycle. Dean, I think we largely agree. I'm a little bit more of a fan of the tariff strategy than maybe you are, but would you say that you're optimistic that ultimately a deal will get done?
Yes, and I think a misnomer to call it a trade war. It's really, Trump is trying to control the theft or the technology leakage to Chinese firms, and they're copying our technology. So it isn't actually trade. And I think he's going to get a deal. We got him that. Because the tariffs aren't helping either country at all. So I agree, but I'm not calling it a trade war. I'm calling it a technology control war. And I think we're going to have an agreement on that shortly.
So before we move on, this is an important topic. I mean, they all are, but I think if I had to pick one, this is probably the thing that could wreck the economy as well as cause a lot of distress in the markets. So if things spiraled out of control, and if we got a legitimate trade war where both sides really started trying to hurt one another, I think both sides would sustain significant damage. But would you begin to be bearish and concerned about the markets and start to think about being more protective in investor money if it spiraled out of control?
Well, we had signs of that in December. That was a sell-off that we were afraid of what was going to happen with, you know, with tariffs. And I think, you know, people came to the understanding that because the Fed also protectively announced not that long after that they weren't going to increase interest rates. So the fact that the Fed was aware of that situation reinforced professional economists like myself to relax a little bit, saying, well, these guys are on board, they're smart, and they're doing the right thing, not politically, but the fact that they were hitting and keeping the interest rates level or even reducing gave me a sigh of relief saying, thank God, they are ready to act if in fact that occurs.
All right.
And that's important. That's a very important fact.
So I will tell you with investors that I am optimistic. But if I began to think that things were spiraling out of control and were potentially going to get way worse, I would act on that and take steps to be more protective. I'm not going to jump the gun, though, but it is something that, like all of these things, I want to monitor. On the flip side, Dean, is if a deal is done, I believe Donald Trump, President Trump, is meeting with Chinese leadership as soon as this weekend. If a deal is done, and it's a reasonably good deal, I think that would be really helpful to the market, because a good deal will help the economy, and that'll help the market perhaps. But I think additionally, if we could park this worry and be able to move on from it, I think that would do wonders for the market. So there is perhaps some nice upside that could be gained. I'm just talking in the markets now. If a deal was done, because the worry would be in the rearview mirror. What do you think about that thesis?
Oh, I absolutely agree. I just think it's important for people to realize that your value added is the fact that you're monitoring these things. Because I remember we had a lot of conversations in December, and I know your clients probably didn't realize that. But that's your basic value, is to pay attention when they're busy doing something else. And I know, you know, you and I are in it all the time. So a week from now, we could be talking completely differently if something happens. But that, you know, I think you're doing a great job, and I have confidence that we can work together and make the right decisions at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely. Very well said. The next two items, Brexit and oil, I think are subsets of some of the other things we've talked about. You know, Brexit has become an important topic in the news cycle on and off for a couple of years now, but the United Kingdom seems to have found itself in trouble trying to get out of the European Union. I don't think today it's a crucial issue, but it's getting worked through with the EU. The EU in and of itself is a bit of a mess economically, slow growth, high unemployment. They have a lot of stuff that needs to get worked out. But I don't think, and I believe you agree with me, Dean, that Brexit has really affected the stock market, especially in the United States, much. So I think that's something that's on the back burner. And it could, though, get to the front burner, depending on how they figure out how the EU is going to be structured moving forward. But what do you think, Dean? I mean, compared to, like, the trade battle, Brexit is less important, at least as of the recording today. What do you think?
Absolutely. I think Brexit is actually helping us keep our interest rates low, because no way are they going to be raising interest rates in the EU, because they're struggling already. So it puts less pressure on us. So I totally agree with you. I think it's much less important than the trade issue.
Beautiful. And so the next thing is oil. And I think this is something that may become more important over the next 3 to 6 months compared to its importance over the last 3 to 6 months. But in April, oil rose to a six-month high. It got to $66.30. But incredibly, and I probably should add this to the slide, incredibly, it's at like $59 and change. So it's gone down about $7 or about 10% since getting to that high. What really surprises me is that we had some shooting in the Strait of Hormuz in the Middle East, which is always a powder keg and is always an area of concern. It's such an unstable region of the world. But the Strait of Hormuz, everybody probably knows, I don't know what the percentage is, but a massive amount of the world's oil passes through this narrow slit of land, of water, I should say. And so it appears that Iran behaved badly and some ships got damaged. You would have thought, I would have thought, that that would have led to oil prices going up. Maybe not like spiking in a crazy way, but I thought it would have perked up at least a little bit, but there hasn't been any of that. So oil prices we want to monitor. If things in the Middle East, with Iran in particular, become problematic, you'd expect oil prices to rise. That would have an impact on the economy and a lot of our thinking on what we believe is happening. But if you get oil to begin making new highs, that would probably necessitate some changes in thinking and perhaps some changes in positioning. But energy stocks, by the way, are some of the worst performing, if not the worst performing sector in the S&P 500. So it's been a rough place to invest. We're not concentrated there. But with our index buying and index investing, we do have oil companies because they comprise a good percentage of the Dow, the S&P 500. But does it surprise you, Dean, that oil hasn't reacted more directly to what happened in the Strait of Hormuz recently?
Not really, and the reason is a little bit different than your comment. In fact, the price of anything is a factor of supply and demand. In the U.S., we are now exporters of oil, so our supply is increasing because of, you know, shale and refracking. So that is counteracting some of the our dependency on Middle East oil. So, and I'm not an expert on this area, and that's another reason why energy prices are down, because the supply of oil is actually going up in the U.S. So no, it really doesn't surprise me. I think it's very comforting, actually.
It is comforting. Good perspective. Yeah. So I want to talk about political turmoil for a bit. This is the last of the several items we wanted to cover on the economic front, and then we'll kind of wrap up. But, you know, I learned at an early age in the business. I've been a financial planner for 26 years now. I know, Dean, you've been in the financial services, or were in the financial services a long time before retiring, is, you know, the general adage was, you know, you don't want to talk about politics in a business setting. But the reality is that since the financial crisis, especially, it's almost impossible to talk about the markets and help people make smart decisions with their money without talking to about politics, at least some. Politics have such an unbelievable important role to play in investing in the economy and how money is working. So, you know, I've just confronted it head on. I talk to clients. I give my opinion. I'm not a bomb thrower. I'll share my honest assessment about what I think is happening politically as it affects money and the economy and the markets. And it's been well received. I have a great clientele. I have a lot of really, really strong relationships with my clients, some of them going back 20, 25 years. And lots of them think differently than I do politically, and they vote differently than I do politically. But we've been able to have constructive conversations about politics, narrowly tailored to what does that mean for their financial plan and their goals and objectives. But it's hard not to talk about the political scene given its heavy importance in today's world. And I will say, before I turn it over to Dean for his quick thoughts, is that, again, going back to the media, what you see on the news tonight is probably not really what the markets and the economy is terribly focused on. Much of what you will see on the news is not what the CEOs of American corporations are thinking about. It's not what husband and wives who sit down at the kitchen table to talk about their financial future are thinking about. It's not what small business owners that are entrepreneurial trying to figure out how to make a buck are thinking about. There is a pretty big disconnect between what the news is talking about and what's actually affecting your money. I'm a news junkie. I like to watch the news. I like to be informed. And I can do that, but separate that out and not bring that emotional baggage into decision making about my personal money, let alone the money that we are entrusted with in our business and with our clients. So what do you think about the political circus, Dean?
Well, I think the biggest value that a professional advisor has is being apolitical. In other words, we have friends here in the villages that sold all their investments the day that Trump was elected, and we have friends in the villages that sold the investment they have when Obama was elected. If you avoid mistakes like that, that's when you really help your clients. I know you're apolitical, you're a junkie, but you don't react to politics, and neither do I, never have, and that's the best thing you can do for your clients, to stay out of politics with your investments.
Absolutely. Good. Beautiful. So what I want to talk about now as we kind of wind down, and I'm going to cover a few questions that I got. So, Dean, if you could stay put for a minute, I'll probably circle back with you shortly. But our assessment is that investors need to prepare for any environment. And as we just mentioned, emotions can often play a large role in how people manage their money. Part of our role, and we have many with our clients, is to help them escape that trap and to make good, smart decisions that lead to sustained success. And taking emotion, especially short-term emotion, out of the equation is a very good way to accomplish that. Real quick, stock market versus your portfolio. One of the things that we emphasize in speaking with clients is that an index, whether it's the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones, isn't a great measure of your portfolio. It's something that we pay attention to, and it's worthwhile, but it's not the end-all, the be-all. What is important is that your portfolio is doing well and is putting you closer and closer to your ultimate goals and objectives and taking the right amount of risk to bring about that outcome. And the reality is that your portfolio doesn't always move in lockstep with any single market or index. And I'll give you a real quick example. If you look at the stock of Berkshire Hathaway, which is Warren Buffett's company, the greatest investor of all time, he's amazing. And Berkshire Hathaway is a great company. But if you look at its return this year as an example, and it's just an example, it's not a recommendation or anything like that, you know, it's up very slight amount this year. So it's way, way behind the market. Now, do you think Warren Buffett is going to change what he's doing? No, not at all, because what he does works over time, and he's not trying to be lockstep with any index. He's going to stick with what he knows will work, and that's what we're going to do here with our clients as well. Be broadly diversified, pay attention to risk, and focus on helping clients win with money, which means achieving their goals and objectives. So again, commercial, you know, we're going to monitor our clients' personal situations on a consistent basis. So what could we do now? We'd be happy to meet with you if you want to review any of these items. A lot of people that are listening here today are not clients, and still many are clients. But either way, we would be very open to meeting with you, confirm your investment goals and objectives, evaluate risk tolerance timelines. We're going to rebalance portfolios where appropriate. We are going to be very, very smart on the tax front. We're going to try and minimize taxes whenever possible, and we're going to use a strategy of harvesting capital gains and capital losses. It's a very important part of what we do for our clients, and we're going to review retirement plans. What else can be done? We're going to look and analyze sources of income to make sure that we're meeting your cash flow requirements, review overall tax planning strategies, and review your emergency fund. We want to have our clients, and we suggest everyone have an emergency fund, money that's available in the bank, not earning a lot of interest, but is available should you need money in a pinch. The car breaks down, an unexpected trip, have to help out a family member. You want to have some money safe, solid, in the bank, available to you. I mentioned taxes a couple of times in the couple of slides. This is the new tax form. You probably filed your 2018 taxes already, but if you bring us a copy of your 2018 taxes at some point between now and the end of the year, we'd love to look and review it to find, if possible, some proactive tax-saving opportunities for 2019. Our goal is to continually look for the most tax-efficient strategies that complement a client's situation. Please know that we're not trying to replace a CPA or an accountant. We do not prepare taxes, but we do want to review them to see if there are opportunities that we can take advantage of. Investors need to prepare for any environment. We're in a rapidly changing environment. Dean and I are in agreement with that. So there's lots of things that we want to monitor and stay closely attuned to. And if we could do that, combined to having a keen awareness of what our goals, our clients' goals and objectives are, we think we could offer a lot of help. We want our clients to be prepared and not scared. So as I close up, what can you expect from us? Constant communication. We want to have more frequent discussions with the people we're working with. And once again, we're consistently reviewing economic, tax, estate, and investment issues for our clients so that we can serve them well. Our role, and this is important if you're not a client of ours already, is that our role is to help maintain a non-emotional objective. We're going to avoid emotional or knee-jerk reactions, and we're going to assist our clients in making smart financial decisions, and we are always looking out for our clients' best interest. Your best interest comes first, and our clients know that we will be there for them. So, Dean, just a couple of quick questions. I think I'm a little pressed for time because this was such a good discussion. But one of the questions was you talked about how the U.S. is the best economy of the in the world. Can you talk a little bit about what that means for an investor in the U.S. investing in majority U.S.-oriented investments, meaning that most of it is U.S. stocks and bonds? Can you just touch on that briefly?
Yeah, very briefly. As an economist, I encourage any investor to be in the strongest economy at any given time. And the U.S. right now is that economy, by none. That doesn't mean you shouldn't be aware of other economies. And if things go, quote, unquote, you know, south here, to have an exit strategy of where else you're going to go. But the basic idea is to be in an economy so that if you have an increasing population with increased demand for housing, services, all the other entities needed to support a population, if you're in a good economy like the U.S. and a well-run economy, you're going to make money over time. It's as simple as that. So the U.S. is the place to be right now. It doesn't mean it's always going to be the place to be. And I know you're aware of this too, but the U.S. by far is the place to be right now.
Beautiful. So if you want to contact us to initiate a complimentary one-on-one financial checkup, an initial consultation, we'd love to do so. You could go to the website, elliottwealth.com, find more information about me and the rest of the team here. Go to the Contact Us tab, and you can email us, or old-fashioned way, just call us, 888-959-5904. And with that, thank you again so much, Dean. I appreciate you taking time out of your wonderful retirement lifestyle to kick around some of these economic ideas. Thank you. I appreciate it a great deal.
Not a problem. It's too hot to play golf today anyway.
And for everybody listening, thank you so much. Please check out the podcast and subscribe to it, and check out ElliottWealth.com. Thanks again.
The views expressed are not necessarily the opinion of Sage Point Financial Incorporated and should not be construed directly or indirectly as an offer to buy or sell any securities mentioned herein. Investing is subject to risks, including loss of principal invested. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. No strategy can assure a profit nor protect against loss. Please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Please note, the information being provided is strictly as a courtesy. When you link to any of the websites provided here, you are leaving this website. We make no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of the information provided at these websites, nor is the company liable for any direct or indirect technical or system issues or any consequences arising out of your access to your use of third-party technologies, websites, information, and programs made available through this website. When you access one of these websites, you are leaving our website and assume total responsibility and risk for your use of the websites you are linking to. Securities and advisory services are offered through Sage Point Financial Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, insurance services offered through Elliott Wealth Management, LLC, not affiliated with Sage Point Financial.
Simply Financial is part of the Exvadio Podcast Network. You can find Exvadio Podcasts at exvadio.com/podcast, the Apple Podcasts app, iTunes Store, iHeartRadio app, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever you find podcasts. So join us and stay informed and entertained.